Welcome to In the Driver's Seat, Pathways to Success, the show where we dive in deep into different career paths, uncovering new insights, sharing expert advice, and exploring the stories that matter most. I'm your host, Lamal Kassos. Today, we have a special guest, Dr. Nelly Elanani. Hi, Dr. Nelly.
Hello, how are you, Lama?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. Dr. Nelly is a business professor in AUC, but I'm sure Dr. Nelly has more stuff to share about herself. Dr. Nelly, would you like to introduce yourself?
All right, thank you, Lama. So my name's Nelly Elanani, and I'm an assistant professor in the School of Business at the American University in Cairo. And this is now my 10th year there. I'm just beginning my 10th year.
Wow, that's really cool. So, Dr.
Yeah.
Nelly, what inspired you to choose this career?
Well, actually, it was sort of by accident. I had never planned to go into academia. So when I was at school, I was one of the worst performing students.
Oh my
So
gosh.
I grew up in yeah, I grew up in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. And my mom was a teacher and then a head teacher at the school that I was at. And I absolutely hated studying, and I really didn't enjoy school at all. I found it very suffocating, restrictive. It just didn't make sense to me why you had to sit in a classroom all day and just learn all of these things that really didn't make much sense to me. And I was sort of, I suppose, a bit, I don't know. I don't think I was naughty. I think I was just very, very hyperactive. I think probably the IB system would have been better for me, but it was basically the system where it was a lot of studying, memorizing, exams, which I hated. And so I really didn't start to enjoy anything until I think it was about grade 8 when I took geography and biology, and also Arabic. So when I was in grade 8, I had this amazing teacher called Miss Umayma, and she just really made me love Arabic. And I think those three teachers, they understood my personality, so they were able to deal with me in a way that I started to enjoy it. But anyway, so I wasn't very academic at school, and then I went to England when I was 16. And I did three A levels, or I began three A levels: sociology, psychology, and business. And my mother had done sociology at A level, so I think that that was sort of a little bit of influence from my mum. My dad was always in business, and I'd done economics at GCSE, and I think I'd gotten a B, maybe a good, fairly good grade compared to my other C's and D's,
He's
and.
nice.
So I thought I'd do business. And then psychology, I think I was advised by a teacher at the school to do it because I was doing sociology. And so a few months in, I actually dropped my psychology A level because the teacher intimidated me and I felt really nervous and upset. So I dropped it. So I ended up just having sociology and business for A levels, which isn't really much to get into university in England because you usually need three A levels. And so I went to university, a very, 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 very average university in England, and I did business, and I got a 2-1, which is like, I suppose it's like a very good, you know. So there's in Egypt, there's good, very good, excellent. And then I wanted to do human resource management or some sort of behavioral related subject for my master's, but my dad wouldn't pay. And he said, no, 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 you've got to do it yourself. Actually, I went to live with my grandmother when I was 16, and I've never
Oh
had
my
any
God,
money.
you were working since you were like 16?
Yeah, so I've never had any money from my parents since I was 16. I did everything myself.
Oh.
And so in England, that's fairly normal, actually. So when I was at university, I had three jobs. So I was working, I used to get up really early and give out the newspaper for 3 hours, and then go to university, and then in the afternoon go and work in a shop, and then go back to university, and then at night I would, you know, work in the food industry.
That's so
So,
much work, but like I feel like
but
that
that's very
actually
normal.
I feel like that actually helps the personality of the person. Like when they work and they get to be independent from a young age, that actually helps them, don't you think so?
Yeah, definitely. It helps you manage your time, your finances, makes it also helps you to deal with different types of people because, you know, and this is something that I see in Egypt. So if you just go to, you're at home, you go to school, then you go to university, and then you finish and you graduate, it's sort of a bit of a shock when you get into the real world because you're not able to deal with people and also people from different socioeconomic classes. So that's definitely, you know, a good thing. You know, I see that more in Egypt happening with the younger generation because there's more opportunities now for, you know, gig work like online and things like that. So whereas years ago in Egypt that wasn't the case. But anyway, so I finished university and then I thought, well, if my dad's not going to pay for university or my parents, let me see if I can get a scholarship. So I got a scholarship. Actually, it was something completely unrelated. It was in manufacturing management. I had no idea what it was, no idea what it would be about, really. And I went to live in the dorms of university. It's a university called Cranfield University, which is a strictly postgraduate university, in a rural town in Bedfordshire, in England. So I was surrounded by like animals in the distance. And a bunch of Spanish people came because a lot of people were on Erasmus grants. And I was like doing warehouse design. But I thought to myself, it's a scholarship. Everything is paid for. May as well learn something new. So why not, you know? And then I finished that. And I don't know. I remember my dad saying to me, Ida, nanti shatra, you know? It's because like I was so belida at school. I was terrible. Like, I used to go home, and my dad used to say, "Intigiti kem min al-akhir," like, you know, and I would get D's and E's and just awful. And
E's. There's
yeah,
E's.
yeah, I was a fail.
I didn't
I mean, I would just get terrible grades. So, yeah, I mean, my mother was sort of like, "Did you do your best?" And of course, I would say yes, because I mean, I thought I did do my best. And anyway, so I finished my master's, and then I looked for funded scholarships for the PhD, and I found a PhD program. And you know, I sort of didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I found it, and I got the place, and I kind of just fell in. Everything just kind of sort of fell into, you know, it wasn't planned. I never thought, oh, one day, you know, it was not planned. But yeah, that's sort of it, you know, kind of a synopsis of things.
Yeah, I get that. Well, like, I feel like the school systems, they don't help the students at all. Like, I'm in an IB system. I like the IB system. It's actually very helpful for most types of students. But like the other school systems, like they just study and do exams, study, do exams. So I just feel like these don't help the students at all. Like it just, why are you doing that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that it's very difficult to, you know, to sort of adjust to a school system that's not suited to your learning or your personality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that that type of education that I had, the rote learning, is good for some people. But for me, it definitely was. I would have been much better even in the American system with sports and extracurricular activities because I was so hyperactive and I had no energy outlet really. So I think it's very difficult as well, especially if you don't have parents that understand maybe what's best suited for you. I remember actually before you went into IB, your father asking my advice about this, you know. And I remember him telling me about you, and I remember saying to him, "Yeah, I think IB would suit Lama." So
Me?
yeah, so I guess it has.
It really does, honestly. I like my school here. So let me ask you a few other questions. What do you wish you had known before you started working like as a professor? Like, is there
Gosh. Ugh.
anything you wanted to know before you started?
I mean, I don't think so because I think with everything you kind of learn as you go along. I mean, for, you know, so just to kind of put things into context, so to be like a professor, to get to like a full professor status, you have to do research, you have to engage in in publications. And so I'm actually more teaching focused. And so while I enjoy research and I like it, for me, my passion is teaching. So some professors focus on more things than the others, some focus on both. So for me, teaching suits my personality because I have a lot of energy. And so standing in the classroom and talking and interacting with the students is really good for me. Sitting down in front of the laptop for hours and reading and writing is it's agonizing a lot of the time. So I think that I did my PhD really young, Lama. So I finished when I was 26. And I think a lot of people do as well. But maybe I wasn't so aware of the field of academia in terms of the what's expected, the politics behind it as well. It's not just standing in a classroom teaching or interacting with students. There's so many other aspects of academia. So there's, service. You have to be engaged in committees in your university, do external service into the community, conferences, traveling, research. There's a lot of aspects in academia. And so I think that it's also changed over the years, the field, changed a lot.
No, yeah, I've never been into the teaching industry at all. Like I'm not into it, I just never really asked about it, but you make it seem so interesting, honestly.
What do you think you'll do when you grow up?
I don't know yet. That's why I'm actually doing the podcast. Like
Okay.
I have my mind set on medicine for now. But I'm actually not sure at all. Like, I'm into a lot of different stuff. I like biology, I like chemistry, I like math. I'm really good at math, actually. I like
Wow.
computer science. Yeah, there's a lot of different
And you're
stuff I like.
excellent at English as well.
You could say that.
See, this is a problem, Lama, when you're too clever.
I don't know. Okay, so what are some fun stories you'd like to share, or like something about your hobbies, not about your career now? Like, you like doing other stuff, like your animal rescue project. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, sure. So about 3 or 4 years ago, I started to become interested in stray
That's
dogs.
recent.
And so, yeah, not so long ago. So it was like summer of 2020, I guess. But then I really started things in summer 2021. So, I mean, I never grew up with a dog. I grew up with cats, or a couple of cats, but I've always liked animals. And so we got a first dog actually by accident when I was maybe 21 or 22, so quite some time ago. I'm almost 40. And it was actually my brother's, and then my brother had to move. And so my mom ended up taking him. He was an Alaskan Malamute. And then because we live in Egypt, my mom had to bring him to Egypt. So that was the first sort of own pet that we had. But why I became interested in stray dogs or Beledi dogs is because what happened was my own dog got poisoned with strychnine. So the government in Egypt used to, they've stopped mostly now, used to import strychnine, which is an aggressive poison, and throw it down haphazardly in the street. So in no systematic way, and in no systematic way in terms of the amount. So they would just throw it down in chicken heads. And some dogs would die from the amount of toxicity. Some would become hot, like get over it, but then be left paralyzed. So my own dog died from it, Lucy, and she actually got poisoned once, and then we saved her. And then the second time she got poisoned, she died. And then a stray dog that used to live in front of my parents' house, Buster, he died pretty much in my arms, and it really traumatized me. So I
Oh,
ended up
that
getting
must
one.
have been so sad.
You know what the sad part is that I wasn't able to do anything about it. So it was that, but it was also the injustice of it. And so it was the fact that, like, if an animal dies in an accident or of old age, that's completely different to somebody, sort of killing the animal on purpose. And So, I mean, from the government's perspective, it's justified because how else do they control the numbers of stray dogs, which is understandable because we have millions. And so they also have to control that because there's zoonotic diseases and because of bites, because of attacks, all these sorts of things. So for them, it's completely justified, but obviously it's an incredibly inhumane, aggressive way to do it. So because of what happened, I started to get like panic attacks, like some form of post-traumatic stress. And so I thought, instead of sitting, not being able to sleep, being like crazy at 2 a.m. and going in the streets thinking that the dogs around my house that I knew that I'd seen since they were puppies would be poisoned, I thought, well, I have to do something. So I went to the Gehez, the local council, on 6th of October, and I discussed the matter with them. And I said, okay, I found a community of animal rights rescuers that would vaccinate dogs for rabies because Egypt has Ru'yat Masr 2030. Their vision is they have one part of it is rabies free, so Masr Khali Min Aswar. And so I became very, very involved with the rescue community, which is growing a lot in Egypt, a lot of publicity in social media. And I agreed with the Gehez that I would sterilize and vaccinate the dogs in my area. So I live in an open hay. And so I thought I might sterilize 20, 30 dogs. I think I've now sterilized 300, maybe. So the
That's a lot
sterilization,
of dogs.
it is
That's
a
really
lot of dogs. And I know most of their names and most of them. So the idea is that you sterilize them so they don't breed, so that we keep the numbers down, we keep the rate of zoonotic diseases controlled, and also by sterilizing dogs and them staying on their street, they don't let other dogs come in. So it's the most humane and the most widely scientifically proved way of controlling the stray animal population. So I've been doing that for 4 years now, 3 years mostly, aggressively for 3 years, but then also treating them. So I've learned a lot about infectious diseases, bacteria, I mean, even, sort of canine anatomy. And I mean, I haven't been studying it systematically, but I'm could probably work in a vet, and which I do sometimes. I mean, I don't work there as a job, but I take so many cases in and help with them. So it was very, very hectic when I first started. I was like in the street all the time, every few days. But now, because the population is fairly managed in my area, maybe like once a month, twice a month, something like that, So and then that's extended into things that I teach and research, actually. So I teach business ethics, and one part of what I teach is animal ethics. So,
Really?
and animal ethics is very closely related to business ethics because of things like testing on animals, the use of animals for cosmetics, the use of animals for fur, for medicine as well. So all of these things come under business. So they're all anything profit rendering with the use of animals then opens up the discussion about, okay, how do we treat animals? And how do we do business and make profit or advance science while we can still treat animals ethically? And the big debate around that stems from the fact that we do not fully understand the pain that animals feel or the extent of their pain. And so that's how a lot of businesses and governments are allowed to get away with what they do, because we can't prove so much in terms of animal pain. So that's kind of a little bit about what I do on the side.
That's honestly really cool, and I genuinely really like the idea. Maybe someday when I grow up, I might be like you.
Wow,
Definitely.
you should come sometime and I'll show you everything.
I'm gonna ask my dad for that.
Yeah, no, that would be nice.
Yeah. Well, now we've taken like 20 minutes. Well, that should be a wrap for today's episode in the driver's seat, Pathways to Success. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Nelly, and tune in for the next episode in the driver's seat, Pathways to Success.
Yeah.